Welcome to the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy. This is the place for everything related to Amazon private label and e-commerce. Learn exactly what you need to start or scale your business. Get insights from the top industry experts who will discuss the latest trends and best practices in the world of Amazon. From choosing products and sourcing from a supplier to setting up your Amazon account and marketing your business, you will hear it here. Let's get started. Here is your host, Vincenzo Toscano.
Hello, guys. Welcome to another episode of the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy, the place where I relate to Amazon FBA, private label, and e-commerce. My name is Vincenzo Toscano, founder and CEO of eComsy, and today we bring you a very close friend of mine, Sebastian, one of the co-founders of Signify, which I will say is, you know, the top solution out there when it comes to sourcing. You really need to find a product. You really need to make sure you find the best manufacturer. Sebastian is your guy, and Julia. So that's why I wanted to bring Sebastian today, because I know they have a lot of insights in terms of what is happening around the manufacturing space. A lot of things been happening in China after the whole tariff situation in the States as well. And, you know, I just wanted to have a very kind of back and forth conversation of, you know, how sellers are feeling, what is the main struggle, how we're going to navigate this whole thing, and how we can keep succeeding. So, Sebastian, welcome to the show. How are you doing, my friend?
Vincenzo, good morning from Germany. First of all, I got a big challenge. I got to wipe that smile off my face. I mean, what an introduction. Thank you so much. Real pleasure, honor. Bro. Things going well over here, I guess, for you as well.
Yes, same. I know here is summer, so, you know, in London, these 2-3 months that we have for a bit of sunshine is a bit of a blessing, because after that, it's pure darkness. So I'm just trying to get as much vitamin D as possible before winter is back, which is pretty much around the corner. So just getting the last few weeks, you know.
Well, I guess, I mean, we're going to enjoy that together from tomorrow on or the day after, yes. Right? Because we're flying over to London, and I guess we're going to see you on Saturday or Sunday and spend some good time together. That's going to be awesome. Nice. I'm looking forward to that again.
Same.
We actually, remember the times we went like 3 days together through Israel? I mean, what an amazing event that was as well.
We had so many trips together. We had Israel, we had Istanbul. Dubai. Honest, I feel I have done more trips with you than any of my friends or family. It's crazy. Like,
wouldn't be a surprise to me. Now we see each other everywhere. Nice.
I know. So, as I was saying, you know, when going live with this episode, like, I really think the whole panorama is shifting, like, with the whole thing around the tariffs, around the, you know, the whole macroeconomics that is definitely affecting manufacturing as well. We also see the Amazon space getting more consolidated. So I just wanted to really, you know, get a take on, you know, how you're feeling, how the whole thing is happening. I guess a good starting point would be China. Like, you know, what is going on in China? Do you see manufacturers being very scared about the whole situation, at the drop in prices, at the increase in prices? Are factories closing down? Are they opening up? Like, what is happening there?
I mean, take a wild guess. What is happening when people run away from a country of manufacturing? They have been very well scared. Prices have been dropped like crazy in China because of also simply having an overstock, right? Or at least for the products that they have in the shelf on or in stock and can't get rid of it. They try to just like, okay, we're going to reduce the prices because there's so many out there who have the stock now sitting in the warehouse and just can't get rid of it. So what do you have to do if somebody else is there as well? And everybody, it's a race to the bottom, right? Yet at the same time, for sure, it has hit the economy for China quite a bit, because remember, like, especially like before Corona, we did about 90% of the sourcing in China. And now we do about like 40% still, 40, 45% of the sourcing in China. People are still coming back. But there was a massive run, especially by the US sellers, because of the import tariffs against Chinese goods. Again, by the way, this is one of the things that I see many, many people don't really grasp or understand correctly. The tariff is not on your product, the import tariffs. The tariffs are on your product based on which country it comes from. So you may have the same product in China, give an example, beauty accessories, $3 million purchasing a year, 27% import tariffs from China. That was like $810,000. Went to Vietnam, same product. I'm not even talking about that the product was still cheaper in Vietnam than in China, but 0% it was back then.
Yeah.
$810,000 saved for the same product just from a different location.
Yeah.
I mean, what's happening for sure, it's still coming back. A lot of people understand it's like, oh, it's actually a good time to buy in China. And what you've seen just now, was it, I think yesterday, I mean, Trump announced that it's going to be another 90 days of keeping the tariffs the same way. So for sure, whenever you talk about like, I mean, he has written the books, right? The Art of Deal and everything. He is a person who can negotiate, whether he always does it in the most sensible way. But he has achieved something for his country.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think at the end of the day, it's always, there's always the two sides of the coin, you know. Like, of course, there's a lot of negativity on a lot of the policies that have been implemented. But I think in the long term, this could definitely benefit, the USA, especially because at the end of the day, what they're really trying is bring back manufacturing to the States, which is something that they've been lacking for so many years. But I found very interesting what you just mentioned about how the whole China situation is also being, I guess, in a positive way, affecting countries in their vicinity. Like you mentioned, for example, Vietnam. Yeah. We were in Indonesia in February. I was with Julian. Everything that's happening there. So it seems like a lot of alternatives are starting to appear in Asia that before they were not possible because China had the monopoly. But now it seems all these secondary countries are starting to catch up and giving now an alternative to businesses in the US to do their manufacturing, isn't it?
And you have seen, I mean, how many of the products, and for example, in Indonesia, due to lower labor costs, etc., you know, can be cheaper. I mean, China is by long, not anymore the country that you go to for cheap products. For sure, yeah. It's quite good there and cheap, but there's many other countries where it's still cheaper. I mean, China has its own China, right? Its own workbench who delivers like the products. China is one example. It's like, for example, does never use their own wood. They import everything of that. Or when it comes to rattan, even though they may be able to produce, I mean, China, in its own nature and surrounding and nature, or what do you call it, environmental protection, yeah. They're becoming better and better. But at the same time, now you look at Indonesia and you see there's a factory worker, a well-paid one, it's like $200 a month. Mm-hmm. Where in China, a normal factory worker is like $600-$700 a month, right? But the difference is that China has already been doing this for the last decade. So they have the production line set up. They have the machinery there. They have the whole parks of machines there, ready for fast production stuff, where other countries, they're made cheaper. But again, remember, they're still cheaper, right? Okay, so there's a cost to it. And that means that maybe it's more done by hand. Maybe it takes a bit longer, or maybe not.
Yes, I agree. I think something that I'm also keen to get from you in terms of insights is, what about the quality as well? Because something I also been hearing from people is like, yes, there's alternatives out of China. But just as you mentioned, they have the advantage that they've been manufacturing some of these specific products or materials for years. They had the machinery, they had the processes, and now these other countries are trying to catch up. They need to go through the learning curve of catching up with the refinement and the speed and scale that China has. So
right.
Do you think that's something that's going to take, you know, a lot of time, or you see some countries already catching up with that?
No, I mean, look at the development. I mean, for once, like, China is massively pumping money into other countries, or China has been over the decades been pumping money into Africa to build up Africa and to make Africa, it's China's China, or the workbench of China especially. But on the other hand, also you see, you know, Chinese, they're also not, I mean, they're very smart people. Like, the biggest investment I've seen is a $600 million investment into Mexico to build an electronics manufacturing company there, made in Mexico, owned by China, but made in Mexico, 0% import tariffs back then. But at the same time now, countries are, of course, picking up. I mean, look, when you very often just need to look at the economy and the situation of a country. Now, Indonesia, the world's largest Muslim country in the world, has a lot of big cities. They're also, I mean, they're, the cities are far, far, have overtaken Germany. I mean, us here in Germany, we're so old school. We're so late with so many things. They have developed much faster, much further than we have. Of course, you still have the countrysides, and there is like something where it's not has been developed so much. But yet again, look at the economies. If they're growing up, guess what? They put a lot of focus, of course, on production, on capacities and quality as well. Vietnam, similar. Now you look at another country like Laos, and they're still building the highway number 9 or so, which back then we took on our world trip as well. And you see that their main highway, or one of the main highways, is a gravel road. So what are they doing? They're focusing a lot of concrete, steel, glass for building infrastructure. Yeah, there may be some pharmaceutical companies already, but they grow in a very, very different level. But many of the other countries, I mean, Vince, you have seen the countries. How does it feel compared to UK? How does it feel to Germany? What do you see in the big cities? Is it advanced?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, even in the UK, I mean, a big shift that we're seeing. I mean, first of all, big cities, specifically London, they're getting very, very expensive. So we see a big shift of people moving out of cities. So that's number one. And number two is when it comes to manufacturing, even in the UK, we see a huge downfall of that because, you know, the cost of having employees in the UK, for example, is becoming so high that it just economically, you cannot compete with the business structure of manufacturing in other countries such as China or in Asia. So I think this is something that, you know, definitely has to be figured out, like just as USA now has been so drastic with some of these policies. I think in Europe, potentially we have to have a look at that because I feel manufacturing, as we know in Europe, to some extent is dying. I mean, there's some countries like Germany, there's a lot of manufacturing still going on. Or Poland, I know Poland is catching up in manufacturing, but like Italy, France, Spain, is dying, you know?
I mean, if you look at Eastern European countries, same thing, right? The cheaper countries, they're still building up, they're still growing. There's a lot, like you say, Poland's a great market for packaging, great market for many other products, where also you may have textile, you may have plastics, you have metalworks, also in Eastern and Southeastern Europe, within the EU, for example, if you're selling inside the EU, I mean, same economic region, right? Like you have no imports, no delay at the customs, no import fees, no duties. And you can actually achieve like positive cash flows by, you know, getting the payment terms much, much better in Europe within the same economic region. Like we maybe don't make a 50-50 and you don't make a 30-70, you maybe get a 10-20-70 or whatever, like 10 down payment when placing the order, 20 when finished, and the rest of the 70% of the payment 60 days after receiving the goods. So you start selling your products, make money before you even pay your suppliers. Positive cash flow, that's like a massive lever for scaling a business. And the other hand, I mean, let's face it, you in the UK, me here in Germany, we're living in the old world. The rest of the world is developing and growing up and building an infrastructure that is needed for today's world. Look at London. Look at Germany, Berlin. How wide are the roads? You have like two lanes. How many cars do you have? We're so overtaken with everything, right? It's like everything's just
we are getting behind.
China, five floors below ground, the metro, or like five lines metro below. I have 5G all the time. I go cross country to the furthest distance region. I have internet everywhere. On our world travel, we were in Mongolia in the desert. We camped there, put up our tent, beautiful sunset and everything. We were looking for a lake in the desert. We like from the GPS, it told us like, okay, we're in the lake, but there was no lake. Next day we noticed it was one dune further. There was the lake. But it was such a bad storm at night that I took my phone. I was like, holy shit, if we need a rescue, can I set up a call? And I've seen like 4G.
Oh my God.
Was like the dust that came over from China into the Gobi Desert in Mongolia. And I had internet there. I'm here right now, close to a large city in Germany, and I have internet troubles.
I know. It happens to me in London. When it comes to this whole panorama we are seeing, which is, it seems like manufacturing to some extent is getting more complex. The reason why I come to this conclusion is because before, even if you didn't know a lot of about manufacturing, it was a common sense that you need to manufacture something, China is the answer, and then that's where you would go. But now, because of the whole microeconomics we're talking about and how everything's shifting, the answer is not straightforward anymore. Now, depending on the material, the machinery, the experience that they have in specific processes, now it could be X amount of countries that before they were not there before, which means now you have to go deeper into doing the research. And that's why companies like yours can add value there. But I guess where somebody gets started, like let's say they want to do a specific product, how do they even know if China is the right country, or Vietnam, or Indonesia, or Germany, or Poland? Like, is there, a blueprint you have that you say, okay, for this material is Poland, for this is China, or how you come to this conclusion?
Fantastic question, and that's the absolutely correct one to ask in the very beginning. What's the product made from? What's the base material? If it's like whatever, it's like a sleeping bag or clothing, well, it's textile, right? And then you'll start looking for countries that are good in textile, and that can be in Europe, for example, let it be Romania, Bulgaria, Eastern Europe. It can be Spain, it could be Portugal, especially also when it goes to Cork textiles. Mm-hmm. Or you look, of course, into other countries like, look, where do all of the big brands source? And yeah, there is Indonesia in there, but there's also India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and or some South American countries wherever you have the alpaca wool from, right? Depending on the countries, wherever that stuff grows. Now, on the other hand, also, if you want to have the special wool, the merino wool, for example, it's like also that is also in Australia, right? Because there's a lot of those sheep down there. So look at what the base material is. If you want to make a bamboo, a laundry collector bucket or basket out of bamboo, or a bread basket out of bamboo, produce it in Europe. Vince, where do we have bamboo in Europe? Probably nowhere, right?
So I was thinking where we could have bamboo. I was actually brainstorming, like, do we have bamboo in Europe? We don't.
I mean, it's more the tropical or subtropical climates, yeah. Right? It's like Southeast Asia, it's the northern parts of Africa, it's the Middle Americas and South Americas as well. So you'd get it from there. We get freshly squeezed orange juice from Norway. Well, obviously, no, but you may go to the Sunshine State, Florida, or you go to Spain or any of the Mediterranean countries in Europe. So same thing is you ask, like, what is the major thing? Of course, there are parts that are always being bought too. And then you look if that product, like a leather wallet, I mean, leather, for example, right? Turkey is not a bad place. India is not a bad place. And many other countries for leather goods are also not a bad place. You may need to bring some. One of the things that I want to tell you directly, please. I mean, when you do the sourcing through a company like ours or somebody else or on your own, be patient. When you're searching from outside of China, I'm always saying the Chinese, they've really understood sales. They're there 24/7. They're there Sundays. They're there Chinese New Year. They answer in the middle of the night. Yes, they maybe only answer one out of your seven questions, but try to do this in Europe. You ask them seven times to get one question answered. The Chinese or any of the other closely related Asian countries, they're there to sell. They're there. I want to give. I want to help.
They
want to earn a commission.
Very good.
But
that's something actually. It's a good point. Like, I feel, which brings me to my next point. Like, of course, we can talk about materials, manufacturing capabilities and all of that. But I feel there's something that is difficult to find, which is the mindset and the culture and the work ethic that you find in Asia. Like, for example, let's say you try to manufacture something in Italy. Good luck if they reply you every 2 weeks. Right? So there's definitely... So there is some reality to...
Four emails or four calls and three emails. You gotta, again, it works, but you gotta stick to it and you gotta do it more often. Don't expect answers as fast as in China, but you will get answers if you really show them. But imagine also, you know, the grown world, the old world, yes, spoiled factory owners. Yep. Where should I deal with you? Vincenzo Toscano, okay, you got an Italian name, but how many units? 500? That was not even worth picking up my phone, little peasant.
Yeah, I know.
It's actually that's a running gag we have among one another. So excuse me, joke. But if you come and you show them, like, look, it's not 500 units, but so always paint a positive but realistic picture to the suppliers you want to work with. So show them like now, but hey, I have the potential. I've built up a business like this already. I want to sell more. I have the experience of selling 70,000 units, your product or the product I'm looking for right now. And I'm looking for several suppliers. Would be a complementary product. So it goes very well with the same client. So showing them, hey, the project is likely to happen and you can earn money, right? But at the same time, please always think in the beginning of sourcing, when you approach suppliers, you are not buying, you're selling. You're selling the idea to them that it's worth it for them to get off their couch, pick up their lazy butt, read your message, and take the time and take the effort for giving you a quotation. Because they could do it 100 times in a day. And 99% of the time for them, it doesn't turn into a project. So they learned to defend themselves in their own time and become lazy and saying, it's like, Vince, if you're talking about 200 units, I'm sorry, I'm not even going to answer. I have so many emails that I should answer to the small potatoes.
I know. So now going back to the whole thing we experienced, especially in the States with the whole tariffs and everything, it seems it's a time bomb. Like there's a lot of uncertainty, especially if you do business with China and you sell your products in the US. So what I'm trying to get next is like, what would be your contingency plan for most people that ask you? Like, what I mean is, should I stay in China and ride the wave? Should I start looking around? Should I do 50-50, like 50% manufacturing in China, 50% in other countries? Like, how you see people...
have you heard of the term China plus one strategy?
No.
That's like have a backup. I mean, in general, it's always good to have a backup of a supplier, because if that supplier goes belly up tomorrow or he has some financial issues he didn't tell you about, he's bankrupt whatsoever, you should have a backup in general. Maybe also a second backup. What if they're out of business? What if something happens? What if that guy is being run over by a bus? Or what if he's getting sick and having cancer, like so many people in this world? And all of a sudden, their life changes and maybe your supply chain breaks away. But it seems to be somewhat still stable-ish and friendly-ish between the US and China. But China plus one strategy is like, have an alternative, have a backup. If you see that the relationship between US and China is very dangerous, wouldn't you consider having an alternative? Vince, if you're building right now, is building some cracks there and you see, holy smokes, there's like a huge crack in the wall. I may fall out of this building soon or it may collapse on me. What would you do? You probably start looking for an alternative, right?
Yeah, I know. I think it's most of the time what is happening, at least from the conversations I'm having, people is also afraid to do jump because they're afraid of a quality being affected. Also the kind of uncertainty of manufacturing on a new country that never been. Maybe they never been to Vietnam, they never been to Indonesia, they never been to any of these countries. So it's the uncertainty of having to try something all new. But at the end of the day, I feel we're right now on a phase of e-commerce that those that don't adapt, they're definitely gonna struggle or die, because there's a lot of things going beyond the USA and China situation. There's also microeconomics here involved.
Let me handle this in term of, let's call it objection or so. From my experience, 90% of the people also have never been to China and they still do business with China. Where people say the bad China, the bad quality. I mean, isn't that like a country to say, it's like, okay, you're doing business, you've never really been there, and it's like so much criticism about China, you still do it there? Now, secondly, on the other hand, why should other countries be worse? I mean, they're all human beings, right? We're all somehow getting along. You will have black sheep. And let me point this out. You will have a lot more black sheep in India. You will have a lot more black sheep in Mexico or in Turkey because it's much more difficult there to do business with them. But why? Because we come from a very, very different culture. You can do business then. Yeah, they still cheat each other, of course. I mean, you have the same in China. You have the same in Germany. Mm-hmm. But in order to say, okay, what do you need? To be honest, it doesn't matter which country it is, right? You need a supplier. Maybe you need to speak the language. Okay, there's somebody who can help you speak the language if English doesn't go. You will need to check and vet those suppliers. Well, if you don't know, there is a solution who can do that. Now, on the other hand, the same what you do in China is you test samples first and check the quality, right? So then you're, of course, also in mass production. Please, on the other hand, to be honest, I also see many people not doing this. Mass production, you do quality control, either before, in the middle, or in the end. Maybe even quality control before and after loading in order to avoid, for example, wood, whatever, the way how it's packed so it doesn't start molding if it's wrapped in cellophane and was still wet and not fully dried. I don't know how people can make this mistake. Or the suppliers let this go, right? Then do quality control. You need to have a safety for your money. Well, use an escrow service, or you just make a, by the way, also a very small thing where it feels like, why do people not know this? You make a down payment and the final money only comes after the production and the quality is confirmed. If not, well, if you pay upfront, what lever do you have to negotiate with your supplier to say, do those changes? And he was like, no, I received the money. Why should I make a change? If you're a good person, sure. But if you, on the other hand, says like, well, otherwise I don't pay you the balance. I want to have the balance, of course. So yeah, I'll do the rework. People have trust in China, but not in other countries.
I know.
Weird. And if I can tell you one thing, it's like me as a German, where it's always said made in Germany. I mean, I'd sometimes be more careful with Germans than with Vietnamese. The way how we overpromise, I wouldn't say overpromise, but quality is a thing. But the full deliverance, again, you have a country that is spoiled, right? A country that's not really hungry anymore. You can do this, but you got to step on their feet. You got to do quality control. You got to remind them. It's like, hey, you wanted to deliver on the 15th. Today's the 14th. How far are you in production?
I know.
Just do what's necessary.
Super important.
Cool. So I guess to start wrapping up in terms of advice from your side, like what would you say is your most do things 2025 to write the whole panorama we just pictured? Like what is your, I would say, top two or three tips that would say people should be going and doing this right now, or otherwise by the end of the year they're gonna have a tough journey?
In either way, I hate the word like when people say it depends, but of course it always depends on your situation. What do you want to achieve? But I think the ultimate answer to all of those questions is, I mean, you got to do the things that need to be done. If you want to find a new supplier within the same country because you want to reduce your purchasing costs, well, guess what? You need to find alternative producers and make sure the quality and the delivery and all the terms are correct. If you want to find another producer in another country in order to reduce your import tariffs, for example, against Chinese goods to the US, well, guess what? You got to find the suppliers in those countries. And by the way, I see so many people say, oh, but we find a supplier who can deliver. Okay. But the question is, wouldn't it make sense to have several suppliers in order not to overpay? Because sometimes people are so happy. It's like, I have a supplier. Okay. What if you find another supplier and that's 30% cheaper at same or better quality? But then what do you have to do? You got to find them and you got to do, of course, quality control. And you got to convince yourself, convince yourself. Go to the factory and see them and check everything. Anything that needs to be done. So look, I mean, it's the same as you got a problem, you want to get somewhere. There's a gap. Bridge it.
Cool, Sebastian. So thank you so much. You know, as usual, you're always dropping, you know, gold. I appreciate you being here. And I know that's why you guys at Signify, you know, supporting Navigate the whole kind of manufacturing situation. So tell me more about, you know, how people can find you, how people can work with you guys, and make sure, I guess, you know, they can succeed throughout this whole journey. Yeah.
I mean, in general, really, you know, consider to say, what is needed right now? Do you need an alternative producer? Do you need an alternative country? What makes the most sense? Where is the where is a good country? Or I think a much, much bigger question is as well. There's so many suppliers now, even with AI, with all those AI companies coming to the market. And guess what? They will probably underbid you by doing more efficient operations or more effective, efficient, cost-efficient operation. So the question is, do you need to reduce the purchasing cost in order to have more margin to get yourself advertising spot number one, or to, in general, to make profit? I see this. We have two own brands, right? We're also Amazon sellers, big box retail sellers, and Shopify sellers. And we see, of course, the competition out there. So yes, I need to reduce my purchasing cost to make any kind of money. If that's one of the case, I mean, would be happy. By the way, another thing, the sourcing trip, if you want us to guide you to your sourcing, let's go there together. But Vince, when you explain this also to your tax consultant, do me the favor. I mean, do not let this, because it is like a vacation, isn't it? Do not let them think it's a vacation. It's a solid business trip with a lot of nice things, but it's a business trip, not a vacation. We're visiting
with some piña coladas embedded in between, you know? Why not?
That's relationship building, we call it, right? That's mastermind. But look, all of this. So I think the trips are so good, you could call them a vacation, right?
Yes, I know. In fact, I'm going to make sure to put all the information about the trips and everything down below so you guys can check it out, because I went in February with Julia and it was a blast. I learned a lot, and I'm sure this time is going to be even better, so you guys cannot miss it. Yeah.
You went to Indonesia with my wife. Huh.
Okay, let's leave it there.
Nice.
Good.
In general, so, I mean, thank you so much, Vince, for inviting. You. Go to signify.net. Signify is spelled in the beginning with a Z, in the end with a Y. So let's see if I get this in the NATO alphabet. What is it? Zulu, India, Gulf. What is N? North, I guess. India.
Yes.
Foxtrotyankee.net.
Or you military. Find
military, NATO alphabet, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll find me, of course, also on LinkedIn, on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, but not so much active. So if you want to book a call just to see what's your situation, there's a book a call button on signify.net. Or if you directly have a product sourcing request, drop in the product. We'll see what we can do for you. We'll get in touch with you. Yeah, looking forward to that. Maybe just drop information about the product.
I will call you. I will put it all down below so people can find it. Okay. So other than that, Sebastian, a pleasure as usual, and see you in the next one. Okay.
The same here. Thank you so much.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The E-Commerce Lab by Ecomsy. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. While you are at it, we would appreciate it if you could leave an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. That will make it easier for others to find out about the show and benefit from it. Want more? Visit our website at www.ecomsy.com, where you can get your first consultation for free. Or find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at ecomsy.